Welcome to Future Pulse, a podcast series brought to you by IPI, your innovation partner for impact. Together, we will explore how ideas, creativity, and collaboration drive impactful innovation. Welcome to this episode of Future Pulse. We're going to take a closer look at the innovation journey of impactful businesses. I'm Yvonne Chan, and I'm joined by Jeffrey Tiong, founder and CEO of PatSnap, and Chiu Kerr-E, the CEO of Winovis. Now, it's often been said that the first step to a successful business is to create products and services that customers want. Well, consumer demands are always changing, and companies have to consistently innovate to stay relevant. In this episode, we'll get Jeffrey and Kerr-E to tell us how they broke boundaries, carved their own paths, and made an impact and are still making an impact through innovation. Jeff, you saw a gap in the market back in 2004, which prompted you to start PatSnap. Looking back, would you have done anything differently?
Yes. There are many things that happened along my entrepreneurship journey. I would say one of it being I should have emphasized more on the team and the people. Back in 2010, one mistake I made was right after I got my first seed funding, angel funding in 2010, I expanded too quickly, and actually the product broke down. The product wasn't working, but I have hired a sales team. We grew from 10 plus people to 40 plus people. But because the product broke down, we cannot sell, and a lot of issue, I had to make the tough decision to lay off half of the company and back to 10 plus people again. It was a really painful decision. And we almost spent half of the funding, about half a million, in less than half a year. And the reason why the product broke down and wasn't working was because I hired the wrong people and so on. But actually, if we look deeper, it's actually I didn't build the right team. I was lacking of leadership back then. So that was a painful mistake, one of the mistakes I made.
Yeah, that was in the first few years when you just started PatSnap. And to add on to that pretty painful lesson, I know that you also exhausted the initial 55,000 very early in the journey. How did that make you feel, and what did you decide to do next?
Yes, I was quite down, and even at one point I was thinking, should I return the money to the investor? But don't know, somehow I persist and just continue on with the journey. And somehow in, I think after a year, back after a year time, then finally I say, finally the product is good again. I think back then one of the kind of belief I have, or at least one goal I have, is even if I fail this entrepreneurship, I should have at least developed the product, have a finished developed product. At least I can tell people that, yes, I failed a startup, but hey, I did finish developing a product.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you're not giving up halfway, right? And even if you had to switch careers or switch to another job, at least you have something to show for it. I think it takes a huge amount of grit and determination to not give up at that down stage that you were in, having to downsize from 40 back to 10 and also go out there and get new funding and getting new investors to believe and trust in you. Thank you for that very candid sharing, Jeff. Kerr-E, let's bring you into the conversation too. I would love for you to tell us more about Winovis and how you entered the market with a ready technology to sell. Who did you sell it to then?
Right. Okay. What we do in Winovis is we do nanoscale patterns. So we create nanoscale patterns onto substrate. So it's something like molding of ang ku kuih, except that our ang ku kuih is the size of a red blood cell. So by creating the pattern on the ang ku kuih, we actually can give it its optical and additional optical and physical property. Yeah. So what we do is very different from the conventional way of innovation. Conventional innovation is you look for unmet market need, and then you look for a solution to fit that need. But for ours is we actually have nano imprinting technology, and we have to go and search for the market problem that is solved. Yeah. So our main application is on the medical diagnostic and sensors market. Yeah, so we are working with our customer right now to test out our solution and to see how our solution can help them solve their problems.
Nice. So you went to them with a ready solution.
Yes, that's right.
To see then how it can be applied, you know, in various scenarios. That's very cool.
Yes.
Thanks, Cree. Yes. I want to ask now whether you think there is a formula to innovation and success, or is it more like, okay, I create the formula as I go along, or it's like hard and, you know, tried and tested method. Jeff, what worked for you and Pat Snap?
I will say there isn't a methodology to really innovate. It's a lot of try and error. But I will say one thing that from our past couple years experience in terms of innovating our new product, one thing I find that as the whole organization grow, if you want to come out an entirely or something quite new initiative, you really have to inject them a lot of resource, and they have to be independently run, not tied to the what I call the mothership too much. If that is the case, actually, once they don't have, it will be hard for them to get the momentum, because the inertia of the organization is so huge, and because everyone have different KPI, the mothership, they will have certain KPI, for example, maximize the market share, the sales, while the new initiative have a very different KPI. If you try to put them not even put them together, but living under the same hood, then the new initiative will be very, very hard. So usually what I found working, and we are also still doing it now, is whenever we have a new initiative, we set up an independent unit and let them have all the resource they can have in a smaller scale, but they still have all the resource they need. Then they go do whatever they need to iterate fast, and then to do and make the decision and changes they want on their own.
That's actually quite a generous approach, right? Autonomy for your spin-off. So very democratic. They have their own decision-making process. And like you said, cut it off, sort of reduce ties with the mothership. So then there's avenues for them to churn out new ideas. I like that. Curry, what do you think on your side? Formula to innovation or trial and error?
Firstly, I don't think that there is a structured methodology to innovation. Step one, this is what you do. Step two and three and four. I think trial and error is important. And I think addressing the right problem is very important. You have to know what is the right problem. For example, whether it's a design problem, whether it's a mechanical problem, whether it's a people's problem. So finding the right, identifying the right problems to solve is important in the innovation process. The second thing I think is very important is you have to learn when to let go and to draw with a different pen. So you cannot be too stuck up in your sunk cost. For example, you cannot say, okay, we have spent half a year using this method and it will be costly for us to move into using the next model. Yeah. So I think this is where the try and error comes in. So you need to be able to feel fast also. Yeah. And to apply a new method to test it, to solve it. Yeah.
That's right. Failing fast is important because you need speed and agility to survive mm-hmm. in this kind of innovation and quick impact businesses. Partnerships, though, that's also key. And I know you started very early in the innovation journey for PatSnap. Jeff, did the type of partners you sought change along the way?
Yes. I will say, yeah, there are different type of partnership, core development, innovation, like kind of partnership, or market channel partnership, or different type of partnership. My own experience in developing a good partnership actually It's the same as looking for co-founder, looking for really important team member. End of the day, you and the partner, and especially the one driving the partnership, who has the decision right to drive the partnership, really have to have the trust, really have to understand each other. So that is some of my own experience.
Trust and understanding. Curry, your thoughts on this?
Right. Okay, the first thing we need to recognize is we need to know that the most intelligent people are normally outside our organization. So we need to recognize that if we find the right people, they can bring to us, they can help us refine our ideas and help us improve on it. So for Renovers, when we want to innovate something, so we look at who are the best people in this area, and we bring them in to work with us. Yeah. Having said that, I think we need to train ourselves to recognize that there are people out there better than us. Yeah. And we need to train ourselves to listen to them and to work with them.
I think Jeff kind of shares that same mindset, right? When you talk about, you know, hiring the right people for your team to ensure that PatSnap also survives that long journey. What kind of entrepreneurial mindset are you looking at in your hires, Jeffrey?
Yes, throughout the last couple of years, I can only say from my own experience, we try hire some senior corporate executive who never work in a kind of a startup environment. And so far, the success rate has been very, very low. I find that for PatSnap, at least our own experience, in order to find someone who can survive and thrive in PatSnap, we need to hire entrepreneurial people. And what do I mean by that is actually someone who can roll up their sleeve and when needed, go down and solve the problem himself or herself. So, and this type of people usually at 1 minute, they are talking about 50,000 strategy discussion. At the next minute, they are actually at 500 foot wheel solving the problem on the front line. So I think this is one characteristic for entrepreneurial people. Second one, I would say have what I call growth mindset or open mindset. They're really open to ideas, open to new thoughts, and keep learning. Because in our current hyper-competitive world, including especially internet or in a startup world, by definition, I think a lot of things are keep changing. So if you don't have a growth, keep learning kind of mindset, it will be very hard to survive. We have to keep always grow ourselves. So these are some of the attributes I would say an entrepreneurial mindset people should have.
That was pretty descriptive. Yeah, having a very strong growth mindset, as well as the kind of person that you want, has to be very agile, being able to think high level, but at the same time when it comes down to it, get down to the nitty gritty and get that problem solved on the front line. Oh, is it easy to find such people here in Singapore?
it's not even in Singapore. I would say globally where we have team is high. Yeah, but one thing I will a few way I will try to kind of identify. One is if they have started a business themselves or even work in a startup before for a period of time, at least like kind of 2 to 3 years, because it is also how I, when I look at one person resume, if this person, let's say for the last 3 to 5 job, they only hang around for 1 to 2 year, 1 to 2 year, 1 to 2 year, that is a bad sign. Because also actually part of entrepreneur person is you have to make, everyone will make mistake, but you have to live with your mistake. Whenever you are in a job less than 2 years, I will say it's hard to do something complete. And someone told me before, like 3 to 5 is a good time. First year, you go in, try to, you know, understand. Second year, you make a mistake, make some mistake, and then you try to live with it. Third year, then you correct your mistake. So I will say three year plus is a good time frame. And secondly, actually about their background as well. If someone entrepreneurial, if their family member, their parents, their dad, or someone close to them actually also have entrepreneurial experience, started a business, that actually have a big impact to them as well. I find that the third one is if they have participate in a very competitive sports.
Mm-hmm.
If let's say it's a if there is a chance, like for now it's having Olympic, if there's a chance somehow we find someone who was an Olympian,
you never
like,
say definitely never. Yeah, you might. You think that's good, an Olympian mindset?
Because it's all about attitude. Yeah, someone who can work hard until being an Olympian, their mindset is actually a lot of time entrepreneur as well. It's like a sports player. You really need to have a great mental mindset. Someone an Olympian definitely should have, definitely will have.
That's so interesting. A resume with a 1 to 2 years, 1 to 2 years kind of gap are alarm bells for someone in the startup phase. Whereas I think a lot of millennials and sometimes Zennials also think that, hey, that means I'm chalking up experience in all these various firms. But rather, to a seasoned entrepreneur, you would want someone to be able to stay the course. So my job experience was 4 years and 9 years. I think I still have hope, some entrepreneurial mindset there. Curry, coming back to you. As a second generation business owner, man, what do you think was key to your company's success? And I also want you to tell me more about the challenges, you know, in creating something that really transformed your family's business.
Right. Okay. So actually for me, first of all, technically, Winovers is not a family business. So we actually sold off the family business, and I actually co-founded Winovers with some of our ex colleagues. Yeah. So I think one thing about working for legacy business is you need to be able to change the way certain things are being done. Okay, the culture of the business. Yeah. So for example, we need to create the culture where there's a mistake embracing. Okay, mistake embracing culture. So by that I mean that we need to have a tolerance for failures and setback, and everyone can try. And so that people don't cover up their mistakes and can openly discuss about their mistakes and learn from each other. So to do that, I think it's important for the top person, the key person, the entrepreneur, to set the tone and remove a blaming culture. So a blaming culture will really kill innovation. Yeah.
And still staying on you, Kurgi, coming back to something mm-hmm. quite current, how has the pandemic affected your business?
From an operation viewpoint, we were shut down for about 3 weeks last year. Yeah, so I was fearful because we only started operation in January, and in April we received notice from the government that we cannot operate. Yeah. So I'm fearful because of I feel helpless. There's nothing I can do. Yeah. So and two things I learned from there. And the first thing is I realized that we really need to invest more in manufacturing technology so that even there's no people operating on your shop floor, you can operate. Yeah. So then the second thing is I realized the importance of the medical technology industry. Yeah, so this is one area that we are focused on, and it's something that we were putting more resources on. Yeah, so this is how the pandemic has affect our strategy and my thinking.
And it had also made Winovers come up with more targeted strategies and targeted
yep.
approaches going forward.
Yeah,
thank you, Curry. Jeff, PetSnap just garnered most recently that very coveted unicorn status. Congratulations. What advice would you have for others looking to do what you did with PetSnap? And I mean, still in this current environment, we understand that there is this huge R&D boom going on right now.
Yes, I will say we are looking back on my journey. I will say, yes, entrepreneurship needs a lot of grit, determination, hard work, diligence, but there are definitely luck component as well. I think PetSnap can come to where we are today. I think that is also because the environment, as you mentioned, the R&D boom,
mm-hmm.
especially since a few years back. Actually, even before that, actually, if we look at the statistic, since I would say Second World War, at least the number I have, since Second World War, every year the R&D expenditure has been growing, even though there is a crash in the market, financial crisis, the R&D expenditure globally is still growing year by year, every year. So be it good time, bad time, the whole world, including the government, including the companies, are investing in R&D. Because if you don't invest in R&D, that means you are still using the current whatever you have to do to do business. And that means you'll be outcompeted. It's just a matter of time. To me, investing in R&D is investing in the future. And especially now is even more needed. They are so, the environment is very hyper-competitive and is globally connected, hyperly competitive. So what for example, what we do in Singapore, your competitor is not just in Singapore. It can be from Shenzhen, it can be from Israel, it can be from US. So the more you need to innovate. But innovation is actually getting harder as well. There was a stat I saw from a Harvard Business Review article. Over the past 40 years, R&D productivity has dropped by 65%. That means 40 years ago, if you invest $1 in R&D, let's say you get $1 return, today you only get 35 cent return. It's getting harder. I mean, there are various reasons why, and I won't go into that. But coming back, for us, I would say, because I think we are glad that we are in this juncture of era that R&D is key. And what we are doing is providing a platform, a tools for innovators, for R&D on the front line to innovate better. And we will continue to do that. I think even, yes, with this status or not, I think even actually after we gain this status, I told the team, BAU, business as usual, we still focus on user, still focusing on innovating ourselves, developing good product that customer will use and willing to pay for it.
So still remaining customer centric, you know, despite the new status, but at the same time, investing in R&D, regardless of the environment or circumstance, is quite the imperative for businesses to survive, right? In this hyper competitive environment. What's next on the agenda then for Winovis Kuryi? Because you've talked about, right, that targeted approaches and strategies that the pandemic has brought about, right, on the company. Yeah. So what's next?
Yeah. Okay. Our substrate are used for medical diagnostic application, which include early cancer and dementia detection. So besides this, we think that our manufacturing technology is the backbone supporting many other deep tech applications, including our sensor, which is a growing market for us. So the subsequent stage is testing and scaling up. We do believe that there's a lot of potential in disruption and transformation in the nanofabrication technology. Yeah. So we will focus on that and focus on our targeted market and scaling up.
Testing, scaling up, and focus on your competitive advantage, right? Your area of specialty, not trying to be something to everyone. And how about software as a service? It is so hot right now, like you said, Jeff. Reports say you're going to use some of these latest funds for product development and to expand your sales presence, your team's sales presence. I mean, you started from 10, now you have about 1,000. Am I right? How else does PatSnap intend to stay ahead, and what's on the horizon for you guys?
Yes, as we continue to dive into the serving the R&D market, the innovation market, we find that actually every vertical is quite different. Let's say life science, developing a drug is also an R&D activity compared to developing a clean tech, renewable energy, car. Electrical car is very different R&D process and sequence, even though they have similarity, but it's quite different. So moving forward, PatSnap, one thing we are doing is going to enter different vertical segment. So life science is one, finance is one, automotive is one, and others. So that will be how we will continue to innovate. And entering every vertical, actually just in previous of this conversation we had, how to innovate. In each vertical, we are setting up an independent team, as independent as possible. And at the same time, our challenge is we are very good at patterns data and other type of data analytics, But when it comes to vertical, like we have to hire life science professional who has worked in the pharmaceutical company for many years, in this space for many years, work with our guys who know what we know, and together they go on, have their knowledge merged with each other and in a way. This will be some of the challenge we face.
I think one common theme that I'm definitely getting from the both of you today is, you know, how important having a diverse team with various capabilities is really key to building up the company's success in the long term. So before I let you go today, if you have one word of advice for our listeners, all right, what would that be? If you say, oh, okay, I've listened in to Jeff and Curry. I just want to remember Jeff said this, Curry said that. What are your parting words, Curry?
Okay. I would like to ask our audience one question. What is it that you are not doing because of the fear of failure? Yeah. So ask yourself, what are you afraid of? Yeah. So, and I think, take the first step. Okay. And, move into the uncertainty, feel comfortable about it, and then take another step. Yeah. So I think, this is important.
What are you not doing because of the fear of failure? Okay, I will think about that too, probably quite a lot. Thank you, Curry. Jeff?
Yeah, I will say usually when I talk to someone, I will hopefully whatever I share can help inspire them, the audience, to I think similar to Curry actually, to inspire them to do something that they have been thinking of doing and just do it. Hopefully through my sharing, for example, looking at me like, hey, Jeff, he's quite a normal guy, normal John Doe. Hey, he can still do something. Why can't I do that? So yeah, hopefully be some sort of inspiration.
Oh, that's really nice. Thank you so much, guys. I really enjoyed the conversation today. And I appreciate the very meaningful and insightful sharing from both of you on your company's journeys. I mean, even though, like you said, you may have gotten one foot into the door, or you know, you think that you might be at the peak of your journey, but this is a highly competitive environment and there's a lot more work that has to be done to stay on that path of success. Some key takeaways from Curry today was really, you know, how important it is to drop that blame culture and being able to fail fast and not get too hung up on that sunk cost, so that there's speed and agility to survive in this environment. And I think for Jeffrey too, the importance of investing in R&D, regardless of how challenging the environment may be, is imperative to a company's survival in a globally connected and hyper-competitive environment. So thank you so much, gentlemen. My name is Yvonne Chan. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time for another exciting and insightful episode.